Good morning. Our last case this morning is case 19-801, Disciplinary Counsel versus Carol Beth Adelstein. We have sitting in place of Judge Donnelly, Judge Mary Jane Trapp, and we have sitting in place of Justice Stewart, Judge Cannon from the 11th District. Both judges are from the 11th District. Thank you, judges.
Thank you.
All right, we'll start with the respondent, Mr. Novak.
Madam Justice, Justices of the Supreme Court, I would like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal. And I would also like to state that it is almost approaching 50 years of practice in the state of Ohio, and it still continues to be the greatest honor to be here today. This case involves one single issue. Should the respondent have a sanction of 1 year, 6 months stayed, or a sanction of 1 year, all stayed? And as a preface to the argument, I would like to state that there were four lawyers in this case who agreed that it should be 1 year, all stayed. The late Scott Drexel, Ms. Adelstein, myself, and Mr. Caliguri, who in his brief states, before this court, relator continues to maintain that a 1 year fully stayed suspension coupled with monitored probation and IOLTA record keeping instruction is consistent with applicable law and is adequate for the protection of the public. The board, following the hearing, determined in this case that the issue of the respondent's multiple sclerosis should not be taken into consideration. But in fact, they ruled that all of the conduct relating to her IOLTA account was directly related to a personal financial hardship having nothing to do with the multiple sclerosis. The stipulations agree that she has multiple sclerosis. It is undisputed, and more importantly, the board never gave any credence to the multiple sclerosis whatsoever.
What evidence was before the board for them to consider?
The stipulation.
That what?
That she has multiple sclerosis.
Was there a link by a medical doctor or any other professional that said her multiple sclerosis was a factor in causing the, I guess, inappropriate activity with the IOLTA?
No, Your Honor. There was not a report consistent with GovBar Rule 5.
Isn't that important?
It is important. On the other hand, there was a stipulation that she did, in fact, have.
Okay, and we understand that. Nobody's disputing that she has MS. It's the linkage that is the requirement.
Your Honor, I agree that GovBar Rule 5 requires it. However, it doesn't necessarily flow therefrom that the failure to adhere to the rule and the failure to provide a report should then cause her to have a 1 year, only 6 months stayed.
Well, that's a different question, I think. Is what's appropriate is different than is this, this linkage made and, it may go to mitigation had there been some sort of established linkage, but there is none.
You are correct, Your Honor. And it is unfortunate that in cases like this, the board often sees lawyers who represent themselves who are not familiar with the nuances of GovBar Rule 5. It happens very frequently.
Okay, but again, that's not our problem.
I understand that. And ignorance of the law is no excuse. But it is agreed by all, Mr. Caliguri and everyone who have worked on this case other than the board, that a 1 year all stayed was sufficient to protect the public. I'd like to refer the court to the case of the Einon case. The Einon case I'm very familiar with, and Mr. Einon worked for a big firm, had very little knowledge of what an IOLTA account was. And the case came up to the Supreme Court, and the court remanded it after it was determined that he did not cooperate with disciplinary counsel's office and that a default was taken against him. The remand was solely for mitigation. After it was remanded, he then voluntarily entered OLAP, and then after the remand, he obtained a report consistent with Gov Bar Rule 5. The IOLTA account was used for personal use. The IOLTA account was used by his wife, who deposited significant amounts of money, and the IOLTA account was hit for various charges for PayPal. Notwithstanding, this court ruled that a one-year all-state suspension was appropriate. The board relies on the case of Alexander. That Alexander case was a case where the respondent totally disregarded the rules with respect to IOLTA accounts. In Alexander, the respondent used that IOLTA account for a lengthy period of time as the personal account. He had no other accounts. Every bill he had, every personal expense he had, he even gave his wife permission to use the IOLTA account. And then when he showed up for the hearing, he wasn't even in good standing. On top of that, he split a fee with a lawyer and did not advise the client that the fee was being split. Given all those circumstances, this court determined that Mr. Alexander had no regard for the rules, none. That is not the case with Ms. Edelstein.
Counsel, is there evidence in the record to show that your client can support herself through her law practice? She has so few clients. Is she able to maintain a law practice?
To answer your first question, in the record, no. Can she support herself? Yes. And more importantly, she's also willing to voluntarily enter an OLAP program for her condition of depression relating to her multiple sclerosis. So that is the best answer I can give you, Your Honor.
And she's also willing to have a monitor, somebody that she can work with and...
No question, Your Honor. She has stipulated to that, but I think she's willing to go the extra yard in entering an OLAP program, and this court has the inherent authority to tack on to a sanction that she be compliant with OLAP.
Counsel, let me ask you about the depression issue. It's concerning to me that she did not make the board aware of depression and other mental health issues that she had until after the board made a recommendation, and still no request for OLAP at that time. You could request it even at the start of disciplinary proceedings. So how are we supposed to view that?
Well, I would ask that you view it the same way Einon case did. He entered OLAP after the case was remanded. He got a report after the case was remanded. And yet we still determined that a one-year state suspension was appropriate, which this court found appropriate.
But isn't a failure to disclose that at the beginning and lay all of your troubles bare at the beginning of the case instead of waiting until after you've already found out at least what the disciplinary recommendation is going to be? That can be troubling.
I'm sorry. I think that her concern, a legitimate concern, was that she did not want to be stigmatized with putting forth her mental health issue. And her affidavit, which is attached to her objections, supports that. I understand your concern. I understand that she's now doing this after the fact. But notwithstanding, the issue relating to her MS was present at the hearing, was present in the stipulations, and has always been there. And MS is generally known to cause depression. So it was there. It was in the record. Thank you.
Mr. Caligiuri.
Thank you. May it please the court, Chief Justice O'Connor, distinguished members of this court, I'm Joe Caligiuri and I represent the Office of Disciplinary Counsel. My colleague is correct that the main issue before this court is whether respondent's chronic mismanagement of her client trust account warrants an actual suspension from the practice of law, or whether a one-year, fully stayed suspension with strict conditions will adequately protect the public. I'd also like to state that Relator takes no exception with the board's finding that a one-year suspension with 6 months stayed is an appropriate sanction and is in the range of sanctions for this type of misconduct. And the board was also justified in relying upon the Alexander decision to support the recommendation of an actual suspension. With that being said, Relator did stipulate before, during, and after the hearing that we would support the recommendation of a one-year suspension fully stayed on conditions. As this court is aware, my predecessor, who has since passed, handled this case both at the investigation, prosecution, and before this court through his brief. So I can only speculate as to the reasons behind the recommendation. But in looking at the voluminous amount of correspondence that's in the record, the 39 exhibits, the deposition transcript, and the testimony, it appears that the respondent had a very limited practice, maybe 2 to 5 clients at any one time. She was in compliance with her trust account practices, record keeping obligations at the time of the hearing, and there was no client harm resulting from her misconduct in mismanaging her IOLTA account. So my sense is that that was the reason why our office agreed to a fully stayed suspension. What Relator does take exception with is the respondent's attempt to inject mitigation evidence into this proceeding, as Judge Trapp alluded to, at this late stage. That was something that she should have and could have brought to the panel's attention and disclosed fully in that manner, and that I believe is a troubling aspect about this case. In reviewing the record, if you look on page 71 of the transcript, there actually was some discussion about the respondent's condition involving MS, and she testified that she suffered from stress and that MS led to depression, which is why she was limiting her practice to just a couple of clients at a time. So I think that there's enough evidence in the record to take the respondent up on her offer to enter into an OLAP contract. And although this is not in Relator's brief, I'm assuming that my colleague would not object, but this court could fashion a remedy if you are inclined to impose a fully stayed suspension to order the respondent to basically consent to an OLAP evaluation within 30 days of this court's order, and also as a condition of any stay that she abide by OLAP's recommendations. This way, if she does not fulfill those obligations, the stay will be lifted and she will serve 1 year the suspension that would happen if the stay was in fact lifted. So I think the court has an opportunity to address the concerns, but I also think it's important that the court rule that it is inappropriate to raise this type of information at this stage of the proceeding because it's just not fair. The other point that I would like to make with regard to the allegations of chronic depression and anxiety, the cases, for instance, the Enon case that my colleague cited, most of the cases when you're talking about chronic depression or anxiety and you're looking for that causal connection, none of which was brought forward, obviously, during the hearing, that causal connection is usually linked to a failure to cooperate or some form of neglect. So even if we were to assume that, and of course we have no reason to believe that the respondent doesn't suffer from chronic depression, but since it wasn't brought before the board properly, even if we were to assume the accuracy of those statements, it's very unlikely that there would be a causal connection between depression and the mismanagement of the trust account. And that's where I think the board was correct in its finding that this didn't really have anything to do necessarily with MS and the lapses in judgment, because the respondent herself testified that her personal and operating accounts had been closed for overdraft activity. So she was just basically using the trust account as a personal banking account, and she just didn't do a good job managing her account. The problem was that she was commingling funds at the same time and exposing other clients' funds to her mismanagement. So again, at the end of the day, we feel that a one-year suspension fully stayed on condition that she submit to an OLAP contract, again, given the evidence that is in the record, although it's not as developed as we would like, that she abide by any recommendations of OLAP, that she complete 6 hours of law office management and trust account record keeping, and that as in addition to those conditions, that she serve a 2-year period of monitored probation with an emphasis on law practice management and record keeping. Thank you.
Counsel, the panel made a finding of a dishonest or selfish motive. Do you take issue with that?
Well, again, the parties actually stipulated, the relator and the respondent actually stipulated in this case to the absence of a dishonest or selfish motive. If you look at the panel's report, they rejected that stipulation, and they basically, the reasoning was the respondent was stating that her lapses in judgment caused by the medication she was taking for MS caused her to mismanage her IOLTA account. The board, in its opinion, stated that the parties stipulated to that, but that actually wasn't accurate. The relator only stipulated that the respondent has MS, and that her testimony was that it caused her to have lapses in judgment, but we specifically did not stipulate that the lapses in judgment was a causal connection to her mismanagement of the account. So I think what the board ended up doing, or what the panel ended up doing, was saying it really had nothing to do with MS. It had to do with her personal financial condition. And therefore, we're finding that there was a dishonest or selfish motive. And my reading of that is that the panel just felt that the respondent was exposing other clients' funds by using her client trust account as a personal and operating account to mismanagement, and therefore that it would, at the very least, it was selfish because she was doing that to cover her own personal expenses. So I don't take exception with their finding of that, but I think it was based in part on they felt that the relator had stipulated to a causal connection, and we actually didn't. If you read the stipulation, that's pretty clear. In fact, the respondent herself stated that although she was stating that there was a causal connection between her MS and the medication and her trust account record keeping, she stated that the medication and her condition did not impact her law practice, and that also is in the stipulation. If there are no further questions, thank you.
Well, just you stipulated that that's what she said. You didn't stipulate that you agree with that statement.
Right. In fact, the stipulation itself said that the parties disagree as to the weight that should be given to what she was testifying to.
Okay. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
In closing, I have a few comments with respect to Justice Trapp's question, which concerns you and concerns, I think, all of the court. I got into this case a week ago. I think I filed a notice of appearance on November 8th. That horse had long left the barn. Unlike Inon, who had an opportunity to enter OLAP and had an opportunity to get a report that complied with GovBar Rule 5, Inon had counsel at that time who had obviously directed that bus in the appropriate direction. My client had no lawyer at any time up until last week with respect to this case. She wants to continue to practice law. She loves the practice of law. That's why she's willing to enter an OLAP program and comply with the requirements for the 2-year period. I understand your concerns. I understand what you're thinking, but I want to emphasize that unlike Einon, who had a lawyer and did all of these things after the case was remanded, she did not until November 8th.
So to clarify, counsel, your client is willing to have an OLAP evaluation within 30 days, and as a condition of the sanction, or as a condition of the stayed suspension, follow the recommendations of OLAP?
Yes, Your Honor.
Whatever they are?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.